Okay, well, hello again, and thank you for tuning in to our podcast series on ethics, COVID-19 in Africa. I'm Joe Ali, Associate Director for Global Programs at the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics, as well as Assistant Professor in the Department of International Health at the School of Public Health. So again, the goal of this podcast series is to explore from an African perspective with colleagues who are bioethicists across Africa, the ethical challenges facing governments and institutions and researchers in the public as we manage the COVID-19 pandemic globally. So today's podcast will focus specifically on clinical services and related ethics challenges during the COVID-19 response. From the perspective, again, of our colleague who is joining us from Ethiopia, from Addis Ababa University, Dr. Adamu Adesiye. So as a reminder, Professor Adesiye is an Associate Professor of Public Health and Epidemiology in the School of Public Health at Addis Ababa University, where he also coordinates the master's program in field epidemiology and is developing a Fogarty NIH, National Institutes of Health, funded training program in international research ethics. He has been an IRB, Institutional Review Board, member at AAU since 2009, and vice chair from 2012 to 2017, and has been the chair of the ethics committee, research ethics committee, since 2017. So particularly relevant, I think, to our conversation today, Dr. Adesiye is the coordinator as well of the COVID emergency operations team at the hospital at AAU, Black Lion Hospital. So welcome again, Adamu, and nice to have you on. And I know you're very busy these days, but I always appreciate the time.
That's my pleasure. Thank you, Joe.
Sure. So I wanted to jump right in and maybe hear a bit of an update in terms of how the COVID situation in Ethiopia and Addis. And then related to that, maybe you could say a few words about your role as the coordinator of this emergency operations team and what that entails and how that team is structured. It'd be wonderful.
Yeah, sure. Thank you once again, Joe. I hope these discussions and moments of reflection will be very helpful for listeners, but also for us as we navigate through this challenge associated with the pandemic COVID-19. So coming to where we are at the moment in Ethiopia, the epidemic, maybe like everywhere else, had a very slow start. So the first official report was done on the 13th of March in Ethiopia. And then since then we had only few cases on daily basis. So until 2 weeks ago, the average number of reports was very small. I mean compared to other countries, also against the population. It's a country of 110 million. And so we had one of the lowest reports in the African setting. And then we were wondering, many were wondering whether the problem is not going to mount or not. So what's really happening? Because this course took about more or less 10 weeks. But since 2 weeks, now we have a surge of cases, with little mortality, but we have an increased number of cases the last 2 weeks, and the doubling also has, the time of doubling of number of cases also has increased recently. So this goes to two things, I think. One is the number of testings being conducted on daily basis. This has increased significantly. And also the other is, I think, the epidemic curve. We have gone already to the point of community transmission. So that also might explain why we have a number of cases. And now we have started seeing also health worker infections in the hospital where I am at Tukur Anbassa, which means a Black Lion Hospital. It is a national referral hospital. It's a university hospital at the same time. So we are at a community transmission. We have a number of cases, which is now we have over 1,000 cases in the country, which might seem small, but I mean, most of the reports were done in the last week or so. And we expect a geometric increase in the coming weeks. And the other is we have a good number of health professionals being infected. So that's where we are. And coming to the question of how we prepared ourselves in the hospital at Black Lion, which means Tukur Anbassa Hospital, that's the official name in Amharic. So what we did was when the first week when we had the official report, we had a management discussion and a decision to set up an emergency operations unit or function. So I was assigned to help in setting up this function with executive management. So we did an assessment to see where we are. We employed the WHO tool to assess health facility preparedness related to an epidemic, specifically COVID-19. So based on that, we deliberated on gaps and strengths we have. And we came up actually a strategic plan on how to deal with it. And one of the activities identified was setting up functions to deal with the pandemic within the health facility. So accordingly, we did a reorganization and set up 12 sub-teams, some or subgroups, which are under the EOC, the Emergency Operations Center, it's not really a center, but it's more of a group of individuals working on it. So we have now 12 groups. If I mention them, the first one is Incident Management and Search Capacity Unit. The second one is IPC, Infection Prevention and Control. We also have a case management team. This is the third group. Case management team has two sub-teams again, a COVID and non-COVID case management team led by an infectious disease specialist. And we have also a psychosocial support team led by a psychiatrist to provide psychosocial support for the primarily for the staff, but also to patients as needed. We have epidemiology and surveillance case team to deal with case detection, contact tracing, epidemiologic surveillance, and so on. We also started, this team also started producing a weekly EP bulletin. So we have the 10th version, I think, this week released. Then we have a human resource team, HR team, to deal with staff assignment, deployment, and redeployment issues because of absenteeism and so on, and coordination of volunteers. We also have a communications team to deal with in-house communication about the incident, but also outside communications. We have pharmaceuticals and other supplies team, including maintenance of equipments. So this one deals with monitoring of what is needed and what do we need, and troubleshooting those areas. We also have a laboratory and testing team, again, dealing with testing issues with COVID-19. So this week they are finalizing actually the in-house testing apparatus, because this is being managed so far nationally at the National Public Health Institute, but now we are bringing this function to our level. We also have a logistics, finance, and general services team, which works on how to go around procedures you know, we have strict bureaucratic procedures when it comes to finances, purchases, and
very aware.
Yeah, it's maybe the same everywhere, but we have those. So, but during pandemic, how to be flexible, and so we had to, so this team works on that one. We have also a training team and capacity building, which runs a series of webinars and so on. Today also was one of the webinars, which the topic was COVID testing in health workers. It's an interesting topic. As the other week, I think one of our staff presented on the professional duty during COVID-19. It has also some ethics element. But we have IPC, how to use PPE. And a number of topics are being presented one after the other. And lastly, we have a monitoring and evaluation team to oversee where we are every week based on indicators and the report back to the big team. So that's how we are operating at the moment.
Yeah. That's really incredible, the how well-rounded that operations center is. And very, I think, probably fairly unique in that it combines all these different functions and support systems very holistically. You know, they're having, for example, you know, epidemiological surveillance activities coordinated alongside clinical activities and personnel management and communications and everything together must provide some sort of strengthens the overall system and approach and response in a way that's very compelling and unique. So that's really wonderful. You're able to coordinate that group. Is this something that exists only within your hospital, or are there other similar centers in other hospitals in the country?
Honestly, I haven't checked. I'm in with the intention of checking if it exists. But we have a very close discussion with the Ministry of Health, because this is as you know, one of the main centers, the treatment centers in the country. So we were asked to present this at a ministry level in the presence of the minister. And to discuss on some issues and some comments they might have about the structure. So the feeling we had was maybe this is something which can further be adopted by other hospitals, at least in town, which means this might have set an example for others to pursue. Yeah. So yeah, we even are thinking within the team, we are thinking to document this so that whatever lesson we might learn will help others to take it up during the response phase of COVID-19 in Ethiopia, but also maybe after post-COVID. So yeah, we're experimenting on it.
It's an amazing system that you've put together. I think it would be absolutely beneficial for not only for your hospital and AAU, I'm sure, but for others to learn from that and how kinds of challenges were encountered in developing it and then afterwards in implementation. I wanted to maybe pivot a little bit towards maybe given your own background and expertise in ethics, you know, in the position you have within this center, you must have sort of thought about some of the ethical challenges that were likely to arise in clinical case management and related to that. And wondering sort of what were some of those issues that you and others you know, anticipated, and how have you dealt with them? How have you prepared and managed and any that have arisen?
Yeah, thank you. Maybe related to the earlier question.
Yeah, sure.
Every hospital at least needs to have like a focal point. That's a requirement from the ministry that every hospital should have a focal point, a focal person, and a unit which is dedicated to deal with COVID. But the extent might not be as we have structured it in our hospital. Yeah, just as a remark. Yeah. But related to now moving to ethics and the ethical challenge, again, now, since we had only few cases in the past, more or less, now we are in the 12th week, the challenges were also not so much. I mean, many were conceptual or theoretical. What would you do if this happens or so? But now, since now 2 weeks, we are facing the challenges are now emerging, and every day we have a new challenge. So just to mention some of the examples related to the challenge. One is related to isolation. So how to deal with isolating suspects and those who turn out positive. And so according to the national guideline, this is mandatory. Isolation is mandatory. It is not optional. It's mandatory. So all positives should be isolated, and close contacts also should be quarantined. And casual contacts could be self-isolating. So those are the options. So there is no consent associated with that. And people might not want to be isolated, not comfortable. And there were also attempts of escaping from the centers, the isolation centers, because staying there for 2 weeks was maybe unbearable for some. So this is one dilemma in general. And then now what we are facing since 2 weeks is related to health professionals. What do you do if a health professional is a close contact, and if they had a very vital function like working in an emergency room? So last week we had 40 of our health professionals. They claimed to be contacts of a patient who turned out positive. So 40 is a big number for our I think the whole staff of our emergency room was 100 something. So the emergency room had to be temporarily closed down for fumigation and so on, but how to continue the service with this space was another challenge, another level of challenge. So should we move to the point of maybe as long as the health professionals are not positive and not symptomatic, and if they could use the right personal protecting equipment, should continue the service? Because now the next level of the problem is what will happen to the patients who need the emergency services. So this is being discussed now nationally, also to maybe possibly redesign the isolation procedure. But now every day this is now unfolding. Oncology also, we had positive staff, and then we had to isolate the oncologists. There are very few. And then the next day, the question was what we do with the patients who were already scheduled and were supposed to come to the hospital. And then we have to have a backup system to address this. So this is one level of challenge. The second one is related to PPEs, personal protecting equipment. As you know, we are a resource scarce setting, and we don't have the privilege of having all the equipment. So in the absence of optimum personal protecting equipment, how much can you force or require from a health worker to continue working, especially risky procedures like intubating a patient? And so on. So we had a number of actually discussions over the week. I will not go to the details, but most revolved around availability of personal protecting equipment to the point needed, but that was scarce. And when you have a scarce personal protecting equipment, how do you continue managing a patient who requires intensive care, very intensive emergency procedure like intubation. So we are actually, at the moment, we are working on, you know, trying to provide what is needed, but at the same time, we are working on discussing case by case about the incidents. There is incident management team, and the team discusses with the management in the immediate department and with the staff, sorry, and come up with realistic solution case by case. maybe a complicated scenario I want to present you with is a patient from last Friday, who was an oncology patient, a child actually, a minor, who turned out that his parents were positive for COVID-19. So according to the isolation guidelines, they have to be taken to the national isolation center. And he doesn't have any other attendant. He's all by himself other than his parents. So they had to be forced. I mean, it was very emotional moment to go to the isolation center.
And yeah,
the four-year child had to stay there, and he was very critical. And he needed intensive care. He's on chemotherapy. He also needed intensive care. And then he went to respiratory arrest in the middle of the night. And then to do a procedure, intubation, there was no one to provide consent. So there was a big dilemma whether to continue with that or not. So in the middle of all this forward and backward discussion, the patient was not able to make it somehow. But he was, I mean, he was negative in the first test. But many thoughts also he might still be positive, so he had to undergo another test. So what managing the incident after also depended on the test, and the test around time also, the turnaround time is also, it's not immediate like in the States or so. It takes at least 48 hours so far at the moment. Yeah. So there are a number of challenges associated with testing.
Yeah.
Isolation, PPE, and availability of scarce resources. You can stop me wherever you want.
Yeah, no, it's
but yeah, I can continue.
No, it I'm sure there are real examples like that really help everyone to appreciate the kinds of challenges that families are facing in these circumstances in Ethiopia. And you had mentioned also that clinicians sometimes need psychosocial support for situations such as that. I'm not sure, you mentioned there's a psychosocial support team as part of the Emergency Yes. Operations Corps.
Yes.
And I can imagine they're able to provide some helpful support now, but for cases like the one you mentioned, from an ethics perspective as well, does the hospital have a sort of standing ethics committee of any sort, or how are sort of ethical challenges often handled, in normal times?
There were attempts of setting up a hospital ethics committee over the years within the hospital. You have met Professor Talahun, I think, when you were here.
Yes.
And he had led some initiatives, and with also the Norwegian team, which I don't know if we discussed about that. There was a group which tried to set up this the priority setting center, ethics and priority setting. Yeah, so they also tried to start something on the clinical aspect. So, but they dealt mostly on training and management and training of clinicians, like interns, medical students, and residents. So nothing has come to the level of setting up a system of reviewing clinical ethical dilemmas. And so there is no, at the moment, there is no... we have a research ethics committee, as you mentioned earlier,
yes,
which operates very well. But the clinical ethics committee, as far as I know, is not functioning up to that level. So ethical dilemmas are handled as part of the clinical decision making by the respective clinicians and the departments in discussion within the unit accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
But this morning we had a discussion that such issues need a backup from an established ethics committee to be consulted. Maybe over hours or as they emerge to make decisions at an institutional level. So the discussion is there. Maybe it's an opportunity for us to strengthen this function.
Yeah, I wonder if it might be. There, it seems like many of the issues, some of the issues you've identified already as, you know, being the issues around scarce and limited resources and PPE and other related issues, could be also discussed amongst a committee to sort of develop, as I think many other institutions around the world have done, to develop some frameworks for thinking about allocation and those sorts of things.
Yeah, maybe then we could be one of maybe we can organize a team under the Emergency Operation Center to look into the ethical issues. Yeah. Well, maybe I'll take this.
I'm sure you have plenty of time to do these things. I guess you've noted that there's an increase in sort of the caseload over the last 2 weeks, and I guess looking forward, if the incidence spikes rapidly, you know, what are some of the concerns then that you have as as a member of the coordinator of this team, and then or maybe from an ethics perspective as well? Are they sort of the examples you were providing earlier, but amplified on a larger scale, or are there other kinds of concerns that might arise if this this pandemic really takes off in Ethiopia and in Addis?
So I mean, to be honest, when this thing started 12 weeks ago, we thought maybe we could be overwhelmed in about 6 weeks, so that the hospitals could be overwhelmed with cases, and you know, like the scenario we might have seen in Europe or like in New York, or you know, we thought of the worst situation. One thing, Addis Ababa is very crowded, as you know, and social distancing and so on is not easy. So with this space, we thought maybe in the coming 6 weeks, the system will be overwhelmed. But this didn't happen. Now we are seeing the early phases of like the community transmission, and we are not yet overwhelmed, but it might happen, as you said, in the coming 2 weeks, maybe, that we might have a serious load of cases. But I don't know, I hope it will continue like this, but it looks like so far, the number of cases we are having majority are mild. So the severe ones are very small, or few cases. And even the deaths we have had, we suspect might not be really due to COVID, but rather due to the underlying illnesses. So if we continued having mainly mild illnesses, I mean, that's one scenario. But if we continue having like proportionally high number of severe cases, then I think the situation might not be... we don't want that situation.
Yeah.
But there is some preparation going on. We have a field hospital in Addis. There is 1,000-bed hospital at the close to the airport. An exhibition center turned to that. The UN agencies have also set up something similar outside Addis. And most hospitals have like a backup plan. At least our hospital has a backup plan of how to close down other services, like scheduled services, like elective surgeries and so on, to turn some of the wards into treating COVID cases. So we have this in mind. So we'll see how it goes, and depending on the scenario, we'll continue planning and replanning. So we'll do that.
Yeah. And lastly, I think you had mentioned there's a communications team, and that team is responsible for both internal and external communications. I'm wondering, I'm sure at the ministry level and nationally, there are various communications about COVID.
Yes.
But could you say maybe a few things about, public communication about utilization of the health system in particular, and whether there are any concerns or prior experiences in Ethiopia with maybe people not going to use, formal health services or other things that would be recommended by the government or others, and whether that's, whether there are any issues there potentially around actually identifying cases and treating individuals in these clinical settings.
Yeah. Yes. So what we saw was, with the curve, from the very beginning until now, now we have the EP curve, the epidemiologic curve, but also there are other curves. One of the curves is the emotional response from the public. So when we had only one case or two cases in the very early week, the emotional response, the panic was way too high. The street was empty actually the next day. People were afraid of going out and so on. Only a few cases reported, but the reaction was very high. But over time, that came down and people started to calm down. And now it is the reverse. To the extent that people are too relaxed, as if there is nothing going on while we have a community transmission. So I think we need to have proportionally a response proportional to what's going on, and we need to be very careful. So we are always sending this message to the public that this is actually a moment where we need a high level of cooperation from the public. Social distancing, the hygiene and so on should be strictly taken, more than what we did maybe 12 weeks ago. That was an exceptional reaction, maybe due to panic and so on. So this is going on. And one of the effects of this panic was that people refused. Some thought it will be unwise to go to health facilities because they could be infected, things like that. That we also observed that. So Black Lion, the outpatient turnout was very low and admissions were very low for a few weeks. But after some time, it got reversed. So patients started coming. So we are working more or less in a full scale, but at the same time tackling COVID. The ministry also has dedicated some hospitals only for COVID. We could send some of the COVID patients, actually all COVID patients, to those hospitals. But those who need critical care, you don't transfer them. These COVID hospitals are not specialized care services. So there are specialized services which cannot be provided anywhere else. So we need to make the right balance there. But now it seems patients are coming. And it seems now the phase of panic has left us a little bit. But at the same time, we need to create the right balance to create a resilient system, health system, which responds to the epidemic as well as the routine services. So that's what we are trying to do. But when it comes to communication, we are through mass media, there is a lot of information going on, trying to encourage people not to shy away from services, because COVID is also an illness, but it doesn't mean you'll die. If you had COVID automatically, that's a misperception.
Yeah.
So you need to come and get your services, but also we have designed a mechanism where some patients, for example, who require refill only, can get refilled through a phone call or by, you know, Telegram or through other media. So we have designed those mechanisms. Also, phone clinic is set up whereby you could talk to your patient over the phone and make some decisions accordingly. But if they have to come, then you will tell them over the phone that they have to come, but you will make a specific appointment, and then so that they will have a short waiting time at the hospital.
Yeah. Well, I think we should probably wrap up maybe for today, but I wanted to thank you again, Dr. Zissier, for joining us and sharing, you know, all of the important work that you and colleagues are doing in Ethiopia and in Addis at this time. And maybe we'll try to check in again in a couple of weeks, and hopefully things will be either the same or not too dramatically changed in the wrong direction. But I think it's helpful for everyone to hear about how Addis and other countries around the world, and particularly in Africa, are planning and handling the ethical challenges that are arising around the COVID response. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Joe. It's really my pleasure to have taken part in the podcast.
Great. Well, take care.
Okay, thank you.